On March 19, 2015, a terrible crime took place outside the main mosque in Kabul. A young woman was kicked, beaten, run over, dragged through the streets behind a truck, and finally burned before being thrown in a polluted river. She had been accused by the mullah in the mosque of committing blasphemy. Several young men who heard the cleric raise his voice against her then dragged her out of the mosque, incited into a frenzy of revenge. The crowd that gathered was told that she was an apostate who had burned the Quran and deserved to die. Several policemen standing by did nothing to defend her. Many took videos of the attack. Highly placed officials, including a female political figure, claimed that such retaliation was justified. The woman's family vouched that she was mentally unstable, but by then she was dead. The internet was flooded with her blood-reddened face as she begged to know what her sin had been. After the furor died down, journalists, women's activists, and international human rights organizations began asking the same question, and it gradually emerged that the woman, Farhunda, who was 27 years old, had committed no sin at all. In fact, she was a devout Muslim. A religious scholar herself, who had just qualified as a teacher and knew the Quran by heart. She had been remonstrating with the mullah in the mosque about his monopoly on selling talismans and holy amulets to the women. In other words, her real crime had been to break with tradition. Her only blasphemy had been to argue with a cleric. Her so-called act of apostasy had been to make a distinction between the injunctions in the Quran and the superstitions being sold to a bunch of uneducated women, whose children would go hungry if they wasted their money on such rubbish. The mullah's fury against her for undermining his reputation and his means of livelihood led to false accusations and the incitement of the crowd. Even her family, it was later said, had been intimidated into saying that she was mentally unbalanced because they feared for their reputation. This kind of behavior should not be dignified by being called religious. It was a glaring example of a cultural crime. When the remains of the women were gathered and prepared for burial, the women of Kabul took the unique step of breaking with tradition. They refused to allow the prayer leader of the mosque to preside over her funeral and turn him away. Furthermore, they violated the custom that women should remain at the back of the crowd during a funeral and strode in front of the mourners, wearing masks of the woman's blood-drenched face. They carried her coffin to the graveyard themselves. It was unprecedented. What was even more significant was that a large circle of men surrounded and protected them as they challenged the customs of their country. This remarkable action, which echoed the events that had taken place a month before in the wake of the attack on the psychology student in the southern Turkish province of Mersin, showed a growing awareness by many people in Kabul, men and women alike, of the distinction between a cultural tradition and divine injunction, between custom and religious faith. Only when social laws are differentiated from spiritual principles can gender equality finally be recognized.